back to Dakota Midday. I'm Kara Hetland, and we're broadcasting from the Speaker's Lobby at the State Capitol in Pierre. And joining me now is Kelly Hepler. Thanks for being here. Secretary of South Dakota Game, Fish, and Parks Department. You started in...
March 3rd, this March. Past yeah,
okay.
2015.
So almost a full year.
Almost.
Yeah.
It's really flown by, too.
You grew up in South Dakota?
I grew up in Spearfish. Yeah, we're a fourth-generation family. I grew up in Spearfish. It's what a beautiful place to grow up. And then 1978, 1979, I moved up to Alaska and worked a fishing game up there and just came back.
Okay, so most of your career up there. Talk a little bit about how the Game, Fish, and Parks budget works. Are we the only state that does it a little differently?
No, every state's a little bit different. There's some components that are very similar. Like, so I'll compare Alaska versus South Dakota. One of our major funding sources are from fishing sales, license sales, from big game tags. That's very similar across all the states. The other thing is a little bit unique here. We have very little GF. And so when you go in and ask for general fund, we have very little in our budget. Our budget's approximately $90 million, and about $2 million of that, $2.5 million is general fund. So, you know, we really don't have very much about that. Another little bit difference, like compared to Alaska, is that our Game, Fish, and Parks Commission, they're the ones that actually deal with this on the budget. The legislature gives us the authority to expand, but kind of the day-to-day project base, how we do budgeting, that's all approved through by the commission. So that's a little bit different than you see in other places.
Okay. But a lot of it comes from sportsmen's funds, sports license sales, all of that.
When you buy a license, that money goes to conservation on the ground, help pay my salary, other people, all the good things you see we do as a department, it helps pay for that. When you go into a park, for example, in the Custer State Park or any of the local parks here, Oahe Downstream, all those permit, all that money goes back in to making that park like it is, and make sure the toilets are top-notch, our boat launches are top-notch. All that money gets invested right back into what we do as a program.
Okay. Talk a little bit about some of the programs that South Dakota offers. Did you know about all of them? I mean, the wildlife depredation, those kinds of things?
When I came down here and interviewed, you know, I certainly had a very good sense what the department was like. I had some good friends. John Kupinar, friends for many years. Secretary Vonk was friends of mine, and a lot of the staff. I knew right off the bat this is an outstanding organization. It has a very well-known, nationally it's very well-known. But when I went to and started talking about it, the thing I did have a lot of experience was dealing with parks. And mm-hmm. We have absolutely world-class parks in South Dakota. I'm so proud of what we do here. Because when I was growing up, we went to them once in a while. We drive through Custer State Park and we had visitors. Like, actually, it isn't a lot different what people do now. But you go into some place like Pierre, what really makes Pierre livable in my eyes is, you know, these state parks we have. And they're wonderful. I mean, the facilities are clean. There's showers and different things. These cleaning tables we have with these boat launches are top-notch. All the different boat launches we have up and down the Oahe and all these state parks, they're incredible. So that program is just, that part of the program I was not familiar with, but boy, I am now. And I just, what a wonderful thing. And Governor Dugard is a big user of the parks, and so that's great for us. It's also neat because he'll call and say, you know, I visit so-and-so park, and you know, you need to maybe look at this or something. So, you know, you get the fact that he's definitely committed to it, and he's committed, you know, state funds to that, but also he's a user, so then we get to hear it from that perspective. So it's a nice balance.
Okay. Working with landowners in South Dakota, how's that going?
In fact, I'm glad you asked me that question. That's one of the big things. There's two things I really tried to do in my time I've been here. One is that we recognize that 80% of the land in South Dakota is owned privately. Most of that is production agriculture, so it's incredibly important for us to build that relationship. A little phrase I coined is that, you know, if you have sustainable agriculture, you have sustainable wildlife in the state. And so I've been working with Secretary Lynch from agriculture, and we went out and we've been doing a lot of outreach with corn and others, trying to make that known to them, is that, you know, we're not here at odds with you. We're saying the same message. You know, we want to help you. We got some programs called Habitat Pays, which, you know, got initiated by the governor here recently. And that program's actually asking landowners to say, you know, we understand you need to make money off your land. We appreciate that and we respect that. But you may want to say there may be some marginal habitat you can work on, maybe moving on wildlife habitat while still getting that financial security for your family. Those type of programs are all about discussions with landowners. Addition to that, what we're trying to do is there are typical people like our NGOs, like Pheasants Forever, Wildlife Federation. These are our people, you know, these are our bread and butter people who have always been our, you know, our partners. We're trying to start that relationship, that discussion between those organizations and production agriculture. Because sometimes, you know, they get differences of opinion, but we want them, there's a lot of commonality they work on them. We want them to start working together closely.
Okay. Now, you mentioned the payment program And is this part of the pheasant discussions, the pheasant summits, rehabilitation summits that have been going on? Did I say that right?
You're real close here. Back in 2013, the governor saw a big decline in pheasant numbers from 2012. A lot of it's driven off, you know, weather as well as habitat. So he was concerned. He knows how important pheasants are to our economy and who we are, South Dakota. And so he invited all these experts from ag, from, you know, NGOs, all these people from universities, sit down and they talk about what can we do to make this better. And 8 recommendations came out of that summit. One of those recommendations recently got done. Secretary Lynch was actually very instrumental in this, is he got winter wheat didn't have crop insurance in the past, so people didn't want to invest in it because you could have a bad year and lose your money. And winter wheat's very important for pheasants for overwintering and for nesting. Mm. And so that recently got through, so we got crop insurance as one of the things we did. But one of the things is Habitat Pays, what I was talking about. There's a number of programs out there, federal, and there's some state, where we'll actually go in and help landlord. Not only map out, we'll sit out your tailgate, we'll sit in your farm table, and we'll map out what your land looks like, but there's programs out there that'll help you put money into conservation, CRP money. Put that in, so then maybe you're not going to turn into a row crop. You can actually then grow the native grass, which we need for pheasants.
And did we see the decline because CRP program changed a little bit and people took their land out of CRP and put it back into production? Is that a large part of the decline that we saw?
I think it's a combination of things. You need to have everything lined up right, like a lot of other things in life. Weather certainly depend upon that. You need the right habitat. But we've seen a big loss of CRP in the states. There's no question about that. And that certainly does not help as far as the pheasant numbers go. But we're seeing some other good habitat come back in. So like this year, we saw an increase from a year ago, about 40% increase in certain areas of the state. That's because we had good overwinter habitat. We had a mild winter, very similar to what we're having now. A great spring. You know, we had a late hailstorm, which I think had an impact on some of those chicks. But that habitat had to be there when the weather lined up, and then we see a good production. So, but this is beyond just pheasants. We're talking about wildlife, too. There's grouse, there's deer. All these things are impacted with improved habitat.
How was the opening? Pheasant opening weekend? Did we have the numbers? Did we have the hunters come?
We certainly had the numbers are up. The license sales are up honestly around 5%. So that's really good. And, you know, it all depends. I mean, certain people had just wonderful hunting. But overall, the experience, I mean, you never complain about a day out hunting pheasants. You know, we were hunting pheasants yesterday, and, man, broad blue skies, you know, the highest years, you know, the birds getting up. What a gorgeous thing. It's just fun among your friends. And so there isn't such a bad thing as, you know, it's not a bad day pheasant.
Doesn't matter if you get a bird or not, right?
No, it does not, at least not to me.
Okay. And some other changes that you would like to see to help the department?
One of the things we're working on also, and the governor's interested in this also, is I've been working with Secretary Emery from Tribal Relations, and we're visiting every reservation, spending time with the Native program, the Natural Resource Program, asking, what do you need from us? What can we do to help you? Whether it's learning how to trap coyotes, whether it's maybe getting joint training with their law enforcement officers and ours. We can help you out with maybe doing some surveys. So we've initiated those conversations, and we've pretty much gone on to all the tribes and asked those questions. And so that, to me, is good. I don't know how often you've seen a lot of that in the past. I know I think on a local level you've seen some very good relationships, but we're trying to strengthen that across. That's a good thing. And so I'm, you know, really happy with that. The other thing we're going to do, and this may sound, you know, to your listeners a little bit boring, but we're going to build a strategic plan, and that's important because it gives us a focus. So we can come to the public or in a show like this, Karen, I can tell you in 4 or 5 lines what we're going to try to work on over the next 4 to 5 years. So it kind of builds that efficiency and transparency in government, which is one of the things we absolutely applaud. We want to do what we want to work on, but also address the workforce development, because, like I said early, is if we don't have our workforce behind us, which we truly do, then we're going to lose what I think is the greatest strength we have in our department.
Any concerns that you have for the next upcoming legislative session? Anything that you're hearing that may have an impact?
No, I'm excited. You know, I haven't, when I was in Alaska, there was a while I was very active in legislature, and then I came a period of time it wasn't. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm still a newbie here.
And so still meeting people.
And still meeting people, you know, so that's good. And, you know, they're still learning who I am. And so I'm looking forward to this learning. It's completely different. They call us lobbyists here, which I just, you know, we're not a lobbyist in Alaska or a lobbyist here. The representative senators do not have their own private office, per se, where everybody in Alaska does. So we have a meeting you can sit on and actually discuss things face-to-face. Now we're all out in the, kind of in the hallway doing business, and, it's in front of God and everybody. but there's nothing really. I mean, I'm very accustomed to legislators. I enjoy working with them. I fully appreciate and, respect the difference we have, from our branch of government from theirs and their ideas that are appropriate and things we can do. So I'm looking forward to this session.
Okay. Anything that you're bringing before lawmakers to introduce on behalf of the Game Fish and Parks?
We have some just basic bills we're going to bring in, but they're very, they're very benign. I don't think there'll be a concern with those whatsoever. So, I'm looking forward to that. One thing I want to say is that how much we appreciate public radio. My wife Carol and I and Maddie are bloodhound. We listen to public radio all the time.
We got
so
the dog too.
So this is wonderful. So I'm sure Attorney General is going to pledge some money when he's on right after me. There's no question about that. They asked me, "Do you want to follow the Attorney General?" And I said, "No way. I want to be first. I know better than that."
Well, Secretary Hepler, it was nice to meet you, and we look forward to having you back.
Thank you, and go public radio.
Okay, thank you so very much. And when we come back, we will talk with Attorney General Marty Jackley. You're listening to Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.